This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Block Hash Podcast, episode 388. This episode is brought to you by Bump Social, a next-gen revolutionary social media app that is aiming to amplify the social experience for users, for creators, and for brands alike. Make sure to go check them out on the iOS and Android store to download the app today. I have Adam Sandman. He is the CEO of Inflectra. We're going to have a very exciting conversation today, largely around AI and what they're doing at Inflectra. Adam, welcome to the show. Excited to have you here and to have a conversation with you today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here and, you know, learn about, you know, what your listeners are interested in and hopefully provide some ideas of what we're doing. And it's always good to have that conversation.
100%. I see the picture in the background too. I like the Inflectra picture up there on the wall.
Yeah, we did stage that. So on Zoom calls, it just to be in about right in reach and above where my chair is. So that's completely staged. And there's a plant. I forget if it gets cut off or not on the side. So we did stage this for being interviewed.
A little subliminal messaging. I love it. Okay, so tell us a bit about yourself to start off the episode. Would love to get a little bit about your story and kind of how you wound up in this arena of work.
Well, like all stories, you sort of start with what you enjoy doing as a kid, and you hope that maybe one day you can get paid for it. So as a 10-year-old, I loved software. Computers were back in the 80s were the new thing, and I was an avid programmer. And I've been a programmer really my entire life, you know, either for fun or for work or some combination thereof. And so I ended up coming to the United States in the late 90s at the time of the dot-com boom. The internet was really entering the public zeitgeist, a bit like in AI today. I mean, AI today is brand new. We're figuring it out. The internet in 98, 99 was brand new. Was it e-commerce? Was it B2B, B2C? It was all being figured out. So I had a job as a programmer in Boston to work for a consulting company. And then their mission as Sapient, they were the architects of the new economy. They were one of the companies that was trying to figure out how the internet would change society, the world, e-commerce, everything. And I worked there for many years. And during that time, I realized that one of the problems we had at the company, or on the products we were on, was that quality was the hard part to get right. We had very skilled consultants, very skilled developers, skilled architects, you know, whatever the business problem was, we had really strong teams. But the one thing that always sucked was testing and quality. I mean, we get it in the end, but the tools were no good. Everyone hated doing it. It was seen as the worst job in the company. You know, we'd give it to the lowest person. Hey, we've got an associate project manager straight out of school, doesn't know that much. What should we do with them? Let's have them run testing. Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, because that doesn't really matter much. Like getting it working at the end, that won't matter. Mm-hmm. And so when I left Sapient, it was because I realized that there really could be better tools and systems out there to help with testing. And it was a common need in software and in consulting to have tools and systems that would help that make that happen. And so I founded Inflectra in, I guess it's 2006, to make better tools for the QA community initially. And then what I realized over the last 18 years is that quality is everyone's problem or everyone's mission. So if you say that it's the tester's job, then it doesn't get done. And by the time it gets to testers, it's too late. So quality is everyone's mission, everyone's problem. And so if you're the project manager, the developer, the UX person, you have to think of quality and design in quality from day one. So the big, I think, change over the 18 years was we saw our core customer persona as testers at the beginning, whereas now we see it as the whole team, the project manager, program manager, everyone from this, you know, the VP of engineering, CIO down. If you care about your business, you need to care about quality, because as several, we're getting into trouble legally, several large big companies in the news have problems with quality right now, whether it's hardware or software systems or a combination. And so quality is in everyone's mind. And especially when you think about AI, which we'll talk about later, everyone's worried about the ethics of AI, but the quality of AI, you know, pre-trained models, models that you're training with your data or customer data, you know, how do we know what's working correctly? You know, if quality was difficult with systems that we had designed, how is quality going to be done with systems we don't even know how they work? So that's kind of my journey, a little bit of what we're doing now and what's important to us. Hopefully that's good story for you, for the people to understand.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, and quality is incredibly important across technology, just generally. I mean, obviously you want to innovate and break things. That philosophy is very common for a lot of people. That's how you move forward. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you need a good product. You don't want it failing on people. You don't want it to go missions critical at the wrong point in time at some point in the future. So obviously quality does, you know, need to stand out as an important factor, which I'm sure is something that's important to you guys in Flexure, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to our website, our tagline is quality at its core. And, you know, we help customers release software without a single point of failure. And that's our tagline. And if you think about it, what we're really trying to do is, you said it really well. You know, in the Facebook 2000s, 2010s era of development, there was the move fast and break things, you know, agile, DevOps, fast moving, make changes. And you still need to do that, because if you wait too long, your competitor's going to eat your lunch. So that hasn't changed. But how do you do that safely? So it's like innovate, disrupt safely. And so I think what we see on one side is agile, disruption, move fast. On the other side is compliance, quality, doing things the right way. And what our contention is as a company is that you don't have to give up one for the other. Like, it's the and. If any of you read management books like, you know, Built to Last or Good to Great, they talk about the genius of the and. And whereas I think companies that are doing it wrong will say, I can either have speed or I can have quality. And that's a fallacy. You can have speed and quality. And the companies that get that right will be the ones that will innovate safely, and you know, with AI even more so, and they'll be the market leaders of tomorrow.
That makes a lot of sense. What kind of companies or individuals or projects or entities are you guys catering to the most?
Typically, it's what we would call the regulated industries. And what that really means is the mission critical industries. So, for example, without naming the customer names by name, it would be like, for example, large airports, customers, water utilities, electric companies, biotech companies that make, you know, pharmaceutical products or medical devices.
So, yeah, things you don't want to fail.
Right. Literally, your power goes out, your heart monitor stops working, your insulin pump stops working. Your electricity goes out, water goes out. Defense, your billion-dollar fighter falls out of the sky by mistake. You know, someone hacks into your defense, you know, network defense systems. All of the, you know, 2/10 seconds of trading is suspended on your exchange, and you can't trade, and that's a $1 billion fine. I mean, it can be finance, it can be insurance, it can be all these industries, but it's these mission critical systems in these industries is the common thread for us.
Yeah, that would be a disaster to see some of those things happen. So obviously you guys have a really important role on the software side. And I noticed that your guys' product suite seems to be based around Spira Test, Team Plan. Is that like right. The main product suite that you offer to clients, or do you
that's
customize
the main
things?
Hub. Yeah, okay. You're absolutely right. So Spira is the hub. Then there's three flavors. Spira Test is really for the QA teams. That's, you know, that's our land product. It's easy to get it going. And then Spira Team and Plan are the expand product. Start with Spira Test, then grow. And then Spira Team would be for a team in an organization. Spira Plan is for the whole organization. So, you know, our goal would be land Spira Test, grow to Team and Plan. And then we have peripheral products that add additional, more specific functionality where it's needed. So we have an automated testing functionality that's really good at certain applications. We've got an exploratory testing capability that you can add on. We've got, you know, IT service management. So other functions that tie into that that hub are there. But typically, all of our clients will be using Spira, and then they add on the other products to for the specific features that they need for their other capabilities or other personas in their organization.
Are there any use cases from past clients that you're able to maybe share as an example or to kind of highlight how some of these have worked in practice in certain industries?
I can give some notional examples. One example will be a hospital network. So hospital networks, they have a lot of software systems in a hospital. So when you go into a hospital, you've got everything from literally Microsoft Outlook, which is, everyone should have that, to, a pharmaceutical product system that's going to dispense drugs to patients. There's systems for monitoring patients. There's everything from your most basic off-the-shelf product to something that is literally cutting edge and unique to healthcare and everything in between. Now, hospitals have to test most of this stuff independently. So just because Microsoft has said, we tested Outlook, it's available for general release, hospitals can't always just take that latest update. They have to test it independently for a clinical setting. And the problem, therefore, is that if hospitals are getting updates frequently, they can't always keep up with the quality and the testing of that. And so they have a quandary. They either don't take the latest update, and what happens then is you're now running an old version, and then you see a cyber attack. And everyone always wonders, why is it so many hospitals get caught in cyber attacks? Well, it's because it's harder for them to upgrade. And if you upgrade more slowly, you're running unpatched versions of systems, therefore it's more vulnerable. Or the hospital has the other option, which is to upgrade frequently. But because hospitals have to independently test everything, it's just they don't have time to do that. I mean, that's not their job. They're not an IT company. They're a hospital. They should be providing care, not, patching, product X. So I think that's the challenge. Another example similar to that was a power company. Power companies have the same requirements by law. They have to independently test everything going in the power plant, even if it's a commercial app that we know is really tested well, like say Outlook. Just because Microsoft has done its job, it has to be retested in place. So a lot of these industries, hospitals and power companies are sort of two examples of the same, but they have to be able to do that. And then other examples that are a little bit different would be, we have companies that make things. So they make like IoT devices. So you're building a device that may be a home solar unit, or it could be an implantable medical device. Well, these have to be tested to a very high standard. And you might be a small startup. You might be launching a new, med tech product. And that could be 5 years away. If you're a startup just building a website, you can literally get any tool you want. You can design it, develop it. The quality is up to you. But when you're going to build a med tech device, if in 5 years you've got to get FDA approval for this, you've got to do things the right way from day one. Otherwise, it could take you 5 years to build the product and another 5 years to certify the product. What you want is when the product's ready to go, you're ready to go. So for a lot of companies, you have to align effectively all the bureaucracy of quality and testing and make that as easy and streamlined as possible. So when you finish the actual hard work of building the technology, you're not spending years and years wrapped up in paperwork trying to get it certified. And that's the problem, is that people don't think of this till the end. So it's like, think of the end and work backwards. I was actually meeting with some people from Amazon, and that's how they work as a company. Amazon's whole mantra is, start from the end product and work backwards from the user experience. So if we want a product that's going to go live, in the med tech space, for example, or maybe a fintech, we have to go through all these approvals. Well, let's work backwards from that. How do we work in reverse and think about, if we're going to need to do all these things in 5 years, let's start at least doing them now to some degree, so we're not re-engineering the entire product after we finished it. Because that's unfortunately what happens a lot. People have a really good proof of concept, they get investor money, and then they go, well, let's go to market. And they're like, well, actually, you've not followed any of the processes. We have to go back to square one and rebuild this whole thing. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that makes sense. You want to build it in from the very beginning. You don't want to have to plug it in at the very end and realize there's a lot of inconsistencies and things not working.
Right. And I know obviously you talk a lot about people working in blockchain. Suppose you're building a new financial service product based on blockchain, and let's say you build something that's really unique and you want it to go live and you want it to be regulated by the, say, SEC, or, and I'm not sure, an expert in financial regs, but whoever's the appropriate regulator for your industry, you've got this new financial product that will change the way some part of the financial service ecosystem will work for like small investors or small businesses, whatever it is. If you wait till the end of this proof of concept and you've got this great product, let's say you've not thought about the regulatory aspects of it, how to design and test for that. There are laws, literally, you can take all the laws on the books, you can build your requirements from that, build your tests, so that when you go to them and say, look, I've got this amazing new product, we need to get to regulatory approval. We have all this stuff already done the right way. They're like, oh, great, we can help you get through that process in 6 months versus 6 years. So I think if you're working in a regulated space, people forget that even things like fintech startups, it's regulated. Or at least depending on the country and the industry and the use case, it certainly can be.
Do you often have to work in tandem with existing development teams for other companies or entities? And how does that process kind of work with you guys, like getting injected? Because I know that that's not always easy as a third party outside in kind of working on some of these things.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, we're a product firm. So typically, there's two aspects. One is there's the team and the any consultants that are working there. And the second thing is, what products do they have? So first of all, as a smaller company, we integrate with all the major platforms, because inevitably, you know, a team might be using Atlassian or Microsoft or, you know, Asana, or you pick your favorite development tool or product management tool. So we integrate with all of those from a technology integration standpoint. So that's easy in some ways. The harder part is usually the change management. You know, a company's been doing things a certain way. And so what we find is the best way is to partner with either the consulting companies that are working there already, or even bring in a consulting firm that might be an expert. Because ultimately, you know, we're a software company. We build tools and we, you know, we get feedback and we improve them. But we're not someone who's going to come in and tell you how to change your business to better improve what you do. But we partner with companies that do that. And so that's an important thing for anyone starting a company, I guess. If you're going to build a pure product company, once you start getting into the enterprise space, which we do play in, that you're going to require someone who's able to help customers adopt your platform. And if you're selling into SMB market, it can be self-service. You can have videos, online learning platforms, and for the most part, they'll just take your product, adopt it, and figure out how to use it. Working in the enterprise and maybe medium to enterprise space, you now need to think about implementation partners. And so we have built that out. But if you don't think about that from day one, you may have the same problem. You've got an amazing tool, and no one will use it because the change management costs more than the tool saves. And that's always a problem. So, you know, a mental exercise would be to you, think of a client you're working with and imagine if I gave the tool to them for free, for $0, would they say yes or no? And sometimes they would say no, because they would say, oh, I love your product. It's really great. And it's free. But it'll cost me $10 million to retool my entire team, train everyone, change all our processes. And if that's the case, then the problem is not your product. Your problem is you need to figure out how do you work with a service partner to streamline that and get rid of the objections and the barriers. And it may be that you have to find a way to demonstrate ROI and get financial metrics. And so it becomes a much more complex sale. And as software companies, we're not always good at that. That's where you need to work with a company, a partner network. They do this for a living. They have, you know, they know how to generate ROI and help prove to business that this $1 million of process management is going to save $3 million in savings in a year. Now, that's a different conversation. So instead of it being a cost, it's now a reduction in cost.
Let me ask you this. In terms of other technologies that are out there, maybe AI, maybe blockchain, how do you see some of these things maybe changing the landscape a little bit for software, whether it's, you know, directly related to you or indirectly?
AI is going to change a lot of what we do. That's an easier discussion. Blockchain, I mean, we have some companies that do work on the blockchain. It's much more around contracts and, you know, trusted, non-trusted counterparties. There are definitely use cases that we will come across. I would say for us, it's not as mainstream right now amongst our industry. I have friends who run businesses in blockchain and NFTs. And so on a personal side, you know, I know there's a lot of interesting work being done there. And I think for certain industries, it really does give you the ability to have, you know, contracts to self-execute, and you're not relying on counterparties. So there's definitely use cases. We just haven't seen as much. And part of the problem is a lot of the blockchains have speed issues with high numbers of transactions. So that can be an issue for some of the financial service stuff where we work. One other blockchain issue I have come across is data privacy, because everyone's kind of scared right now. If you put certain data in the blockchain, because the blockchain builds on itself, if we get a quantum computer that's going to break some of the hashes, will we have PII or PHI data suddenly exposed, because we can now break the hashes and we can't remove the data very easily? So I think there are some interesting, we've had conversations around how blockchain will affect the industries we're in. I haven't seen as many use cases. Now, AI is a whole other story. I've actually been incredibly surprised, without again naming clients, we have clients in insurance and banking and manufacturing who I would have assumed would not touch AI with a barge pole at this point, because they're heavily regulated and they're heavily conservative. They have been the first to adopt some of our products and certainly to try out some of our products. And we're doing things in generative AI, and we're also doing some things in, I would say, more traditional machine learning and data science. And we're seeing incredible openness to this. Now, what everyone's afraid of, I think, or not afraid of, but I guess trying to figure out, is what's the landscape going to look like in 2 years? So things today, you know, how do we build software today? We take requirements or user stories, we design the UX, we put together plans, we build code, we test code, we put it in place, we have real people test it, and we release it, right? That's sort of the life cycle. Now, AI can do a lot of this. It can, you can draw a screen on a piece of paper and stick a picture, and you can have it generate some boilerplate code for you. You can have it give it a name of a feature, and it can build out your test plan. It can build out your requirements. It can even write the code and the tasks at an 80%, 70% level. So suddenly your dev team, your dev stack goes from being craftsmen. If we think of the early days of factories, we go from craftsmen working to build code. And many of it's, much of it's boilerplate code, to having a factory. We have a factory with supervisors and foremen. So developers go from being craftspersons to factory managers, factory supervisors, where AI is the factory. So there's still developers, there's still project managers, there's still UX people, and there's still going to be lots and lots of QA and testers, but we're not doing the same jobs. I'm not manually writing, for those who know the industry, Selenium scripts doing automated testing. I'm not doing human testing where I click through a bunch of screens 100 times and take screenshots. You know, a lot of that stuff's going to be automated. Now, someone's going to review all that stuff and make sure it's good. In the same way, in a factory, I'm not sewing together shirts. There's a machine doing that, but I'm making sure that the shirts are sewn correctly, they don't fall apart, that they look the way they're supposed to. So I think as humans, the human machine team is going to change how software is designed, developed, tested, deployed, all of the steps out of recognition. But there's still jobs for people. There'll be different jobs. But I think there's a lot of angst in our industry, in the software development industry, around, you know, I'm coming out of you know, university, college with a CS degree, and I've been taught this is my job. Well, it's not going to be. It's going to be a different job. Now, how do I feel about that? How do my parents feel about that? They paid for college. It's an interesting, without going too much into all that, there's a lot of interesting discussion I'm having with both, you know, people, graduate students, people who are looking to hire, people we have hired, and then just people I know whose kids are going to college. What's the job landscape in the technology sector going to look like? And the answer is, I don't know, but it's going to be different.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be different. A lot of people are scared that jobs will get completely like supplanted in some kind of way. But honestly, I think what will end up just happening is it'll just get shifted to the left. You know, it'll just create a new job, but the old one will probably get absorbed. And you'll see that across different industries. And I think it'll be fine in the end, but you're seeing so many different businesses and corporations, entities really, I think, dive into AI because they see the ways that it can make processes more streamlined, save them money, faster, better supply chains, better verification methods, more security, cybersecurity. Yeah. There's a lot of applications. It's a very exciting space.
Well, and if you're a startup entrepreneur, you know, one of the constraints to growing was people. You'd have to hire people. Mm-hmm. You're competing against Google and Facebook for the best talent. You know, you got to hire a team of 10 people to start a business. Maybe you can do it with two people. The whole solo entrepreneur, I mean, maybe that's exaggerated, but not so much. I mean, I started in Fletcher as the programmer. I wrote the first version of our product, and then I waited a year or two and hired my first, you know, employee to be my sort of second programmer. Now, with AI, if this was 20 years later, what would I have done? I don't know. Maybe I'd have had a team of six AIs and a couple of people, and we could have. So we could have shortened the curve of building the business from 5 years to the growing to the size we did to two. I mean, one. I mean, that's an interesting dynamic. It may change unless if you're an established company and you're worried about disruption from startups. You know, that's now on steroids. I mean, you've got startups that can compete with your entire dev team, and they don't have a dev, or they have a very small dev team. So, you know, the rise of the two-person unicorns. I don't know if that, again, that could be exaggerated, but it does change the economics of the software development industry from a startup and, you know, scaling a business standpoint too.
Yeah, I think that'll just come down to regulations at the end of the day. You know, are we going to allow these two-person unicorn startups with just some AI tech at their disposal to take over, you know, Wall Street? Or, you know, are we going to have some kind of rules put in place? You know, that's a really good question. Will there be parameters?
I can tell you, well, in America, the answer is probably no. In Europe, probably yes. I mean, if history is any guide, over beers, we could talk about that. But no, I mean, but it's true. Different countries have different appetites for risk and regulation, and then you get competitive advantages. And it will be interesting to see what happens and, you know, what succeeds and what fails.
How are you guys implementing generative AI in particular? So when I think of generative AI, I think of like DALL-E or Midjourney. But how are you guys applying it to like your line of work within Fletcher?
Great question. We've got two or three different threads running. So first of all, what's actually on general release? Let's start with that. General release, we have an AI capability right now using Gen AI, and it's basic. It takes requirements and user stories and feature descriptions, and it builds out test plans, builds out risk matrices, and builds out BDD scenarios and tasks. So it basically streamlines what would take time. So if I'm a project manager, I get a new idea for a user story. So a user story might be something like, as a user, I want to be able to book a flight between city A and city B. And traditionally, mm-hmm. you would take that story, you'd flesh it out with some descriptions, and then you'd say, well, how am I going to test that? Well, I can test it. You can fly from Boston to DC and DC to Boston, but you can't fly from Boston back to Boston. You know, you do all these, you figure out the test cases, you fill out the use cases, you do the same thing. What are the risks? What are the tasks the developers are going to do? And this takes you maybe an hour or two. You know, it's a bunch of clicking and typing and thinking. With our new AI functionality, you hit the button and it generates all of that in about 10 seconds. Now, it's not perfect. And I had some of our QA folks look at it. And what they said is, you know, it generated 20 tests, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 were like stuff I'd, you know, could have done myself. Now, of course, it's quicker than me doing it. Two of them were the ones that I would be like, no, that's a waste of time. That's not right. Delete those two. But three were ones they hadn't thought of. And they're like, well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of those. So already you've A, saved that person a lot of time in just rote generation of stuff. Mm-hmm. So instead of writing all the stuff, they're reviewing it and simply editing, which is always quicker. You know, it's like autocomplete on an email. You know, much as it may not be right all the time, it certainly saves a lot of time. So that functionality is already on general release. And now we're looking at how we optimize that functionality so that, you know, making it more intelligent, taking more input prompts, so that depending on what the customers have defined as their different requirement types and test types, maybe we can get more detailed prompts sent to AI. So instead of it giving me just 20 test cases, if the client's already specified in the metadata that they want security, performance, and functional testing, well, why don't we ask the AI for those three specific kinds? And now we'll get 60 tests covering all those domains. So you can make AI by reprompting and narrowing down the search as a part of the system. The value out of us will be better designing the prompts so there's even less work for the user. So that's like our first kind of GA product, general availability product, and how we're planning on enhancing it. The second and more interesting piece is on automation and testing. So the next piece is, well, I've got this test case that says, test I can fly from city A to city B. What if that could generate tests that would go to, say, Expedia, if that was the tool what we're testing? And it could literally click through the application, take screenshots, and do it with a high degree of accuracy without it having had to be have a human go through and build that first. Today's way of testing a website would be I click through it and either I use a tool that records what I do and builds out my test, or I, as a developer, I code that in something like Selenium by hand. And either way, if you do it by hand, it's more reliable, but it takes a bunch of time. You can click through it and record and play, but then it breaks and it's kind of brittle. So we've never quite gotten that in the testing world right. Now, AI is allowing us to do this at scale and at speed where, without having seen it, or maybe having just gone through it once with a human, it can now learn and adapt. So that will suddenly change the economics of testing. Because the biggest problem with testing is I can't test every combination of city from, you know, A to B and B to A and, you know, round trip, open jaw, there's so many data permutations that to test that the UI works every time is very difficult, which is why when you do try and book flights on a platform, 99% of the time it works. 1% of the time you get some weird error, you go back a few steps and try it again and it works. And you're kind of mildly frustrated, but you put up with it. AI would help us get around that. We would now have it be much more automated. And so then people can use their time to find those weirder cases or verify the results to see what we're missing. So those are some of the more advanced use cases that we're actively investigating from an R&D standpoint to see how feasible is it to automate the downstream part of the testing. And then also we're doing some work around code analysis, data science work to see if people commit code, other historical patterns where we can see they did these things, therefore we can predict future outcomes like predictive maintenance. So there's some ideas there. And then the last piece will be just every application is going to be expected to have a copilot in it. And so right now in our tool, let's say you wanted to build a report to find where the problems are in your application. You click around, you add some filters, you build a nice dashboard, you've got a nice BI dashboard. Yeah, it takes you 10 minutes. What if you could just ask the system, hey, system, build me a graph to find me my problems. Here's what I consider problems to be these things. It goes and builds everything, comes back. So as humans, we're going to expect this in our applications. The days of clicking for 10 minutes will be seen as archaic. In the same way that we don't expect to use a green screen, we don't expect to use a thick client app. We're expecting modern web apps that are reactive and instructive and get us what we want quickly, we're going to be expected to have interactive chat as part of any app. So I think our expectations from a user interface are only going to be accelerating. And so to any application, it's going to have to add all this functionality to stay in parity. So we're looking at adding some of that stuff as well, more around how do you simplify the use of the application, particularly for managers who are trying to get complex data, and how do we give them that data on a giving it basis rather than having to manually build a report basis, which is the way we do it today.
On the topic of development and testing, is there any risk associated in your mind with generative AI being applied to some of those?
Oh, yes. Every step of the process, we're adding risk. Because we're using a mixture of, pre-trained models. We might augment that with vectors and things that we've added to the pre-trained model. Most companies can't afford to typically build their own full model from their own data set. Data set's too small usually. So you're taking a pre-trained general model and you might be augmenting it with your customer information in the prompts or different ways of doing it, databases and things. So what you're doing is taking a set that someone else has trained and like tuning it kind of thing for your needs. So it's never going to know exactly what you run. It's never going to be 100% right. What we're hoping is statistically, the model will give us better answers, quicker answers that we can then refine. So we are putting a lot therefore on the downstream interpretation of that to say, well, it's generated this stuff, whether it's code, requirements, whatever it is, it's generated graphs, data, pictures, whatever it is, it's generating something that's 90% useful. We have to figure out what that risk is. What's the delta? Like, and we've seen this in the news where you have models where they haven't done a good job of risk analysis and it creates results that are catastrophic. Either actual catastrophic or reputationally seem to be catastrophic. So I think there's a lot of risk with each of those steps. The question is, how do we mitigate that risk and without it taking longer or costing more money than the time it was supposed to save? Because if AI will save an hour, but it takes 2 hours to verify, it's negative. The ROI is negative. So, and the other thing that people don't realize is AI is still quite expensive. If you're using the latest models like GPT-4 or 4.5 to do some of this, and to reprompt and send data, it actually can cost more just in dollars in the number of tokens you're using than a human. So for example, we looked at some cases where we could get automated testing that was as good as a human, but it was more expensive than a human, which is crazy. Even when you looked at literally, imagine hiring a full-time tester in the US on a US salary, look at how many tokens this took. Imagine you're running this test through AI every day, every second, every month, the human was cheaper. So only because right now it's still expensive. But as the models get more advanced, the older models are getting cheaper, the computing power is getting more, you know, the chips are getting better, the economics are obviously going to get faster. In the same way that the very first steam engines cost more than the equivalent number of human workers. But as they made more of them, they became cheaper. As the GPUs get faster, the economics are going to increase, are going to change to make it much cheaper. But right now, some use cases are very cheap. Some use cases are actually very expensive. And I think there's a bit of a misnomer. I think everything's that it's all a lot cheaper right now, and it's still an evolving art.
Yeah, that's just the exponential growth theory of technology. It's just going to keep getting better and better and keep compounding. Right. I mean, even look, you know, back a year ago where, LLMs were when they first came out, they're putting like 11, 12, 13 fingers on people when they generate a picture.
Right.
Now it's like so photorealistic, I can't even tell if something is real or not. Like, it's crazy good, and it's growing incredibly rapidly. I'm excited to see where it takes industry in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends who work in LA in the creative industry, and they're freaking out a lot, because I think a lot of, in the software development space, we know about risk and we know about, you know, what technology improves and you create new jobs. I think in the entertainment space, they're not sure what the future will look like. And I think there's a lot more fear there about, you know, what's AI going to do for some of the, you know, VFX and even just some of the original artwork and original creative jobs that are used. But you can't fight the tide of technology, as you said. It's coming. We have to adopt, embrace it, and find ways to mitigate the downstream risks. That's all we can do.
Looking forward into 2024 a bit more, what are some things maybe you guys are planning to do with Inflectra? Like, do you guys have any new product suites that you're working on, or things you want to integrate or offer to clients? What's on the horizon?
Great question. A lot of it is around AI, unsurprisingly, and also just obviously general usability. And, you know, we have to, you know, customer requests, customer needs always go into the product. We're not launching a new product per se, but what we are doing is looking to embed AI more natively in our platform and giving users a choice of models. For example, everyone's obviously very focused on the OpenAI model set, which Microsoft has. We've also been talking to AWS around some of the Bedrock models. So we're looking at bringing world-class a variety of different models into our platform and exploring these different use cases. So in 2024, we have coming for general availability, we will have AI-based automation. So that test automation funk piece I mentioned, where you can take natural language testing instructions, like taking the idea of the flight booking a flight from A to B, taking that natural language and turning it into automation that can be run without AI from a speed standpoint, but will then automatically test applications. So that's going to be a big game changer in terms of the economics of testing. So that's our big major AI feature that's not yet in GA. And then obviously improving the current AI features we have, giving different providers, giving different options in terms of which models we use. And sometimes what we're finding is if you use different models and then compare the results, you might want to have an array of different models like Mistral versus Claude. Having different models available and having the same prompt run through multiple and looking at the results gives us the advantage of being able to find the best of breed model for different use cases, but abstracting that from the user. User doesn't care. User doesn't care about what model. User says, I want to do this thing, do it for me, make it happen. We want to understand what's the best output, which has the lowest risk, do that, and then give it to the user. So by the end of the year, I'd like to think we have that available in our products.
Where can people go if they want to learn a bit more about Inflectra, and if they want to get in contact with you guys as well, maybe they're a prospective client, where would you direct people?
Thank you. Yeah, Inflectra.com, the company name behind me on the board. In LinkedIn, Adam Sandman, I'm on LinkedIn, Inflectra Corp, we're on LinkedIn as well. We're going to lots of different events. So look, again, go on our feed. We host lots of meetups and local events around the country and around the world. So again, go to our company page, go to the events page, see where we are, connect with me on LinkedIn, happy to chat anytime.
Adam, thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I think it's fantastic what you guys are doing in terms of what I'm going to call quality software development. We don't want the F-22 Raptors falling out of the sky or COVID 2.0 getting released into the air. So it's really important what you guys do. And thank you for taking the time to dive in and explain it and some of the things that you guys are working on.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It was a pleasure.